Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Is it you can say about hot tuna? They just keep getting hotter. I love that piece of music, Embryonic Journey. What a great song. Welcome back to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block because it's 6 p.m. on Thursday evening. I'm your host, Jim Christina, and I am sitting here looking at my charming, delightful co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, sitting in her little huddle hovel there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in front of a whole bunch of books. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Jim. It's so good to see you in the studio tonight.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. It's always good to see you, too. And I love the fact that you got your earphones on, your ears and your mic, and you're ready to rock and roll.
Ready to go.
We are. You know, I don't know about how it is in Albuquerque, and I certainly don't know how it is in Canada or L.A. right now, Henry. But My wife tried to get us appointments to get our COVID vaccines today. There's none to be had in Idaho. None. And the ones that are there, all the teachers are getting. So, I mean, they say, well, if you're over 65, you know, they could sign up on Monday. Well, we signed up on Monday. There was no vaccine. So why bother signing up? So here we are.
New Mexico is like in the top. We were the third best place. Fourth now, but Jim, who you know is 80, my husband, he got his vaccine last week. He goes back on the 11th for the second one. I'm two groups away, but I've registered and I get reminders, text reminders. We've got you. We're waiting. There's more coming. It's really, really well organized here in New Mexico.
It's not here in Idaho. So, oh well. Anyway, we have, of course, it's the first Thursday of the week or the month, and we have, of course, our wonderful, charming friend, Mr. Henry Park, who's the aficionado of all everything West, and of course, the author of Henry's Western Roundup at blogspot.com. I just keep screwing that up. But anyway, welcome back to the Writer's Block, Mr. Henry Park. Hey, Henry.
Hey, thank you so much. Hey, Jim. Hey, Bobby Jean.
Hey,
I'm getting my shot tomorrow.
Good.
That's what they tell me. Since I always brag shamelessly about my interviews, I just got off the phone with the country music star with the deepest voice in the world, Trace Adkins.
Wow.
Oh, God.
I'll tell you, I sound like a member of the Lollipop Guild whenever I talk to him.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Trace.
he's been in a lot of westerns, right? Does he have something coming up?
Yeah, he thinks he can act, Bobby.
Oh boy.
Anyway, I'm sorry, Henry, go ahead.
That's okay. Well, as a matter of fact, I'll talk about his movies in a second, but actually season 2 of The Ultimate Cowboy Showdown starts February 24th on INSP, and he's the Trace is the host and the judge as he was on season 1. Jim, did you see season 1?
No, I caught the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to watch, I have to say. Never having done any of that on horseback, I just thought, wow, these guys are like really good.
Yeah, it's a very impressive show. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I just love it. They have some of the best working cowboys from around the country compete in all sorts of challenges, riding, roping, driving cattle, really complex relay races. Trace sends at least one cowboy home every week, and the last man standing wins a $50,000 herd of cattle, a rawhide portable corral, an arrow-equipped Q-Catch 87 series cattle chute, And most importantly, the coveted Ultimate Cowboy Showdown belt buckle.
Wow.
And, now, is it a $50,000 herd of cattle? That's what, three cows and a bull?
No, I think
any more?
I think it's about 50 of them. I think they figure like they're about a grand a piece.
Wow.
So it's smart because it's like they use the props and then they give them to the winner. Because these are the cattle that they work the whole time. And they use the, you know, portable corral and the catcher and all of that stuff. And then they say, and now they're yours.
Wow.
Oh, and I should point out that 4 of 14 cowboys competing are women. You know, most women who do that kind of work don't really want to be called cowgirls.
No, they're cowboys.
Yeah, I interviewed one of the contestants, Jennifer Hudgens, and she explained that to them, cowboy is a job, a verb, as in, you know, I cowboy, I work cattle.
Right.
By the way, I've seen the first three shows, and I wouldn't be that surprised if she won. She's very good. It's a really strong group. Oh, and because, Jim, I knew you'd want to know, I also talked to Trace about his Western movies.
Yes.
Well, you know, I think he has to be the first new Western movie star of the 21st century. He's already starred in... Yeah, well, I can't think of anyone else who has started in this century and, you know, had the impact that he has. He's already starred in 7 Westerns. He has 2 more in post-production, Old Henry and Apache Junction, both shot during COVID. He told me he's supposed to start his 10th Western next week, but he wouldn't tell me anything about it. He said he's been in this business way too long that he doesn't talk about any project until it's actually like in the can and got a release date.
Right.
But, you know, the Sundance Film Festival is going on right now remotely, and there are at least 2 movies of interest to Western fans, although neither is exactly a Western. Wild Indian stars Michael Gray Eyes, who starred as Sitting Bull in Woman Walks Ahead.
Right.
Which is really good. It's a contemporary.
It's a great movie.
A contemporary story. Wasn't it? And, you know, 99% of the history is right. I was really impressed with that. This is a contemporary one about 2 men who have to confront a shared secret about the savage killing of a classmate. And the other one is called The World to Come. And I guess you'd call it an Eastern because it's about pioneers, but on the East Coast. Anyhow,
okay.
2 pioneer couples face hardship and isolation together. And I suspect the wives decide they like each other better than they do their husbands. And not that there's anything wrong with that. And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry. And, of course, we'll be seeing you the first Thursday of March.
I can't wait, but I'll have to.
Well, I guess you're going to have. You know what? You're welcome on anytime you want to come. You know that.
Well, thank you.
But it's usually you're having dinner or you're busy. So
I eat way too much.
I know. Well, okay. Go have fun. We'll talk next month.
I'm looking forward to it. Take care, guys.
Okay. You bet. Bye-bye. Okay. Bye. Tonight's guest, he's been writing since he was 13 years old, and he discovered his mother's typewriter gathering dust in a closet. You know, it's exactly where I found my mother's typewriter as well. So we do have something in common there. He started submitting his work for publications at the age of 15 and had his first story published in 1992, the same year he graduated from university. I have a question about that, but I'll get to it in a minute. Under the name Mark Leslie, he has published more than a dozen full-length books. He pens a series of nonfiction paranormal explorations for Dundurn, Canada's largest independent publisher. He also writes fiction, typically thrillers and horror, and edits fiction and anthologies. Most recently, as a regular editor for WMG Publishing Fiction River Anthology Series. I'm really not going to get into a lot more. If he wants to add more, he certainly can. But I have to say that is a total honor for us to welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Mark Leslie.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. I have to ask a question about the British and the Canadian use of the word university and hospital. You don't put the in front of it ever.
Very rarely.
He went to hospital or he went to university. It's not he went to the hospital or he went to the university. It's always Sans the word the.
We use the for hospital, but not for university unless we're going to the university. But yeah, we Oh, you mean if I'm physically moving towards the university.
Exactly. And you know, I have to say that your path has followed mine somewhat in that you started writing very early.
Right.
You started writing short stories. You have how many books did I say? 13? 12?
Actually, 25.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, look at your website. Yeah,
I love the paranormal, and I have to say, I have read one or two of your paranormal books, and I knew your name from somewhere, but that was it.
Did you read the Haunted Hospital stuff. Book?
No. the Haunted Hospital. I don't remember. It's been years since I've read them, but I know that it's I'm a paranormal freak, absolutely. Right. Much like Crown Royal, right now I'm drooling over you, sipping on yours because I just finished mine. I've penned 15 so far, and I'm working on another one. And Bobby Jean is like, she's the world's best interviewer, but she doesn't write. So you get kind of like the best of both worlds tonight.
I'm a reader.
So let's talk about this book that you just recently put out in December, I believe it was. It was released. It's entitled Rude Awakenings from Sleeping Rough. It is about a friend of yours. It's a true story. It's a biography. That he is homeless in London. And as things went bad to worse, he chronicles almost minute by minute what goes on with him from the time he wakes up with somebody masturbating over him at a park bench, which is, I mean, it's one of the most unique openings of a book I've ever read.
That's very Peter. Yeah.
It's extremely, and it just, I mean, sears into your brain. Until the very end, and when he's stuck with a lease on a house that he didn't really want, and he's told him 50 times he didn't want it, and they forced him into it, and now he's behind the eight ball, like everyone else that had that house. It's just an amazing, amazing story, and it's one that myself and Bobby Jean, we won't soon wash out of our brains. It's quite poignant. I have to say, and this is a actual friend of yours.
Yeah, Peter and I have been dear friends for a long time. We met as booksellers years ago, and he moved off to London. He grew up, and he was born in London, so he's a London, UK citizen. Grew up in Canada, and then was going to London to research an ancestor of his, Sir John Kirk, who, ironically, was... A Night in the Slums. He was working to help the impoverished, the people who were less fortunate in society, and was responsible for setting up a lot of the charities that his great 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 grandson ended up getting being a victim of, as opposed to being somebody who was helped by these charities. And so while he was there researching his grandfather, great great grandfather, he fell into some hard times and unfortunately got to see, you know, a couple hundred years, a hundred or so years later, exactly that the systems that were put in place are unfortunately not necessarily run in the way that they were intended, and found a difficult situation. Now you mentioned that opening scene, which is quite disturbing. But one of the things I've always known about Peter, and he follows through on this even to this day. I was speaking with him yesterday, and dark humor, if it wasn't for humor, that's one of the survival mechanisms that he has long used. Like, he has always been brilliant, hilarious, but, you know, never shies away from self-deprecation, never shies away from dark humor. And I honestly think that's been one of the things that's helped him survive these. I mean, to be quite honest, when he sent me the manuscript and I was reading it, it was not easy to read. This is somebody you love and care for, and this is what they have gone through. Uh-huh. It's not an easy book to read. And you guys mentioned that, right? I think Bobby said you were speechless when you finished it.
It's a very hard book to read because, as Bobby and I discussed the other day, it's like I talk to all the guests on Tuesdays. Bobby and I would usually talk sometime during the week and discuss the book that we've read for the week. And we both decided there, but for the grace of God, go us.
Yeah.
And I think that's true with everybody. And I really honestly do. I mean, I think everybody in their lifetime has been on the cusp. I know I have, and Bobby Jean, I think you have, and Mark, you probably have as well.
We're not,
it's not all that difficult to get there. I mean, just one bad mistake and, you know, you're homeless, carless, you know, you're living on a park bench.
I think one of the most poignant chapters in the book for me was when Peter talks about, the difference between having been there, rushing around with his, you know, his fancy coffee from the local coffee shop,
and then
kind of just ignoring the homeless people as you walk past, because that could never happen to me. I'm not like them.
Exactly.
And this shocking reality of, oh my God, I am them.
Right.
And this, I think one of the most eloquent things that a lot of people that I've talked to have gotten out of the book was, you know, that simple reminder that these are humans. These are people with passions, feelings, you know, and that they're actually acknowledging them as a person is something we forget to do, you know, in our day-to-day busyness.
All right. You know, there's a paragraph at the start of one of his chapters, and if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of read it to you. The chapter is "To Sleep, Perchance to Dream," and this is the paragraph. It has been said that in space, no one can hear you scream. On planet Earth, the screams surround us but go unheard. They simply add to the general cacophony of modern life. The crashing and thumping of roadwork and construction, the screeching of music indoors and out, one-sided phone conversations passing by, fights erupting, tires squealing, horns blaring, sirens wailing, babies crying and dogs barking. The screams of the homeless simply add to the ruckus and get lost in the aural haze. What a wonderful, wonderful description. Oh, I read that and I had to go back and read it two or three times. And I read to my wife and she said the same thing. She goes, oh, my God, this guy is like talented.
Yeah.
And as you see, he was extremely talented. But yeah. I mean, that pretty much describes everything that he's going through. And then his last comment in the last of the book, don't help the homeless, feed them. I loved that.
Yeah.
I just thought, wow, this is like almost too much for my little Italian psyche to take at one time. So
Peter has always been such a brilliant writer, and one of the things I look at is that because of his skill, I mean, he is a journalist and has a history of journalistic writing and editing and all of the things, is he's actually able to describe what it's like from the point of view of people who very rarely have a voice or have the ability or the means or a way to express that in a way that other people can understand it. And so I think his voice speaks on behalf of those who aren't able to express what it's like, and obviously do it in such an eloquent way. I know his intention and his desire is to get this book, to get his story into the hands of the government, of the people who oversee these charities, and there are a lot of well-intentioned people who work for such organizations, but there's the way that they're set up, there's corruption, and even as you read in the book, is it prevents people. It actually, it holds them back rather than lifts them up. Right? It prevents them from the full ability to realize what they could be, because they need them to be, for example, they need them. Well, you have to have a mental illness, or you have to have a problem with alcoholism. Right. And it's like, Peter, like, none of these things check off. I don't fit into their mold.
Exactly.
But they're going to force me into that, which is really frustrating.
Yeah. Hang on. Don't lose that thought. Don't go away. We're going to break away for a real quick commercial, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this brief word from LA Talk Radio. Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back with our guest tonight, Mr. Mark Leslie, and of course, Bobby Jean Bell, staring at me on my little Skype machine here. It is now 6:18, and if you want to call and talk to Mark, and I think this is one phone call you definitely want to make, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. Got it, Bobby, and I didn't even have to read it. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And Mark, I have to it seems like you're absolutely right, and he is absolutely right. In reading this book, it seems like the charities and the government really trying to keep him suppressed, keep him down. And that's really chronicled, and it doesn't show any better than the scene where his counselor calls the guy that he wanted to go to work for and tells him he didn't want to do it. He cancels his appointment to go get the job and doesn't even tell him about it. I mean, that's cold. You know, and that right then I just figured, holy crap, these people, they don't want you out of the gutter. They want you to stay there.
Yeah.
And I think, and my guess is probably because they're getting a kickback from the government on every dime they're getting from for the homeless. You know, the more they have, the more they get. That's my opinion. Not necessarily that of the management.
But again, it's kind of like it's the stats, the statistics are more important than the people. In a lot of cases, and that's so frustrating. I think one of the other things that you made me think about was the housing that he was forced into, where there's a lot of, unfortunately, because they cram a lot of people in together, is there's some dangerous people there. And there's oftentimes Peter talks about still sleeping with a knife under his mattress.
Right.
And that he actually felt safer sleeping on the streets half the time, and would actually prefer to go there, because at least when he's out in the open, there's 360 degrees you can run, as opposed to being backed into a corner where there is only one exit. And thinking about if somebody's going to say, I would rather sleep with my, like, take my sleeping bag and go sleep on a park bench, or go sleep under an underpass, or whatever it is, because I'm safer there than I am in this housing. That's a pretty terrifying situation.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to jump in for a minute as you talk about the things that he shares. I think we all see or walk by folks that are in this kind of situation, but I don't know. It's not even that we don't see them somehow. We just really don't know what their day is like, and, you know, walk in their shoes. One of the sections for me that was, this was a very hard book to read, and yet so well written, so compelling, so engaging. He was taking us moment by moment in these conversations that Peter would have with the different counselors and such, where I kept thinking to myself, is he typing into his laptop while he's having these conversations? Because we're getting it as though he was journaling through all of this.
Right.
But I digress. He shared about just the physical challenges the body goes through as you move from, carrying your backpack and your little suitcase on wheels, which is what he had at least initially, and what it was to just have that with your body. And then he talks this whole physical change that his body went through as he became more, embedded into this lifestyle. And then even later when he's living in the home, the house that you're both are talking about, and he talks about lying on the bed and looking at the spiders up in the corners and the snails and the different things, and that the day is kind of a counting of pennies and minutes.
Right.
And I thought, here we have an incredibly talented writer who is seeing and capturing and envisioning all of this and putting it in language that rips at our hearts, but is riveting and puts us right there with him. And he's able to describe this. I think about so many of the folks that can't describe this,
right,
who are going through, he's talking back, he's engaged with his counselors. He's saying, why am I signing that? What am I signing? Oh, you don't need to know. We don't have time. It's not important. Just sign here.
Yeah.
This is a guy that's like, I just happen to not have employment and not be housed, but I'm a thinking, we need the Peters. We need these folks to be speaking out and bringing this to right. our attention, as painful as it is in his life, and how much I would like to see him be able to rise above it. He is doing this community, this homeless community, such a service, because he can bring it to us in a way that we can relate. And we can, I think, Jim, it's all the scarier because we can all the more see ourselves
right.
that we could be in that situation. I'm not an right. alcoholic. I don't take drugs. All of the boxes that they want to put him in, those are also boxes I would not fit in. This is a very, very important book. And I thank you for publishing it, because it's unlike anything else, Mark, that you published. From what I can see of the things you published.
I think it's probably one of the most important books to come out of last year, and possibly the year before. It's so well written, and the story is so well told. And he is so descriptive when he talks about his feet. I spent 2.5 years in Vietnam, and my feet, you get just rot in your boots and your socks. And, I can remember taking my boots off and my socks off and my skin coming off the bottom of my feet in my socks, because they just immersion foot. Yeah. And I know what he went through, and I felt it. Mm-hmm. And even though it's never happened to you, you could still feel it.
You're right there.
You're right there with him.
You're right there with him.
And you're going, oh my, can I help you?
So many of the scenes with the people that are working with the charity, you just want to shake them and say, how can you get up and go to work every day and talk to people like this? And there were some other folks that were kind of on his side, and then they turned against him. There was the previous landlord that was really appeared to be very happy to have him come back. Once you're employed, and which is what he wanted all along, what he was telling everybody all along, I need work. And then something subtly, changed. And I think, I have to say, for all of you that have known and loved Peter all of this time, also praise you for being his lifeline, for being, as he didn't really, he did discover that there were people within that community. That was the other thing, Jim. Do you remember reading about how others, really took him in?
Yes.
People that,
yes.
And it is that sort of concept of, you know, the meek will persevere, because they were helping him. They were his lifeline. Right. They taught him how to fight. They taught him how to find food. They taught him, you know, survival skills.
They passed money back and forth, you know, to somebody. Somebody didn't have the money to eat. He would get the money from them.
It's such an important story, and it's not romanticized. It's not glamorized. I don't know. It feels like something sort of for the big screen, and yet I think this is so powerful. The written word and being able to use our imaginations, not have actors play these roles, but immerse ourselves into this writing.
Right.
It's a powerful story.
So when you talk to him, Mark, you tell him that we just loved his book.
It is truly
a very hard read, but it really opened your eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, except for his comment about, you know, be careful who you make your friend, because they may not be your friend. And as we found out, the one person he did make his friend turned out to be not so much.
Right. I found it really warming how the people with the least amount were willing to give the most. Really?
Right.
And I think I've actually seen reactions, because I pay a lot of attention to the reactions that people have to this book, because I know it's a life-changing read. And a comment I remember was, I was disappointed that there wasn't a happy ending. And I was like, we have to make the happy ending. This book is a call to action for us to work on this, right?
There was an ending, and he was moving, but he was still homeless. And as you said the other night, he's still homeless.
And can't come back to Canada. Can never come. He can reapply as an immigrant and all, but, you know, certain.
Yeah.
He's still in a really rough place.
It truly is. And the book, of course, is called Awakening, Rude Awakenings from a Sleeping Rough. And it's totally about Peter C. Mitchell and his trials and tribulations of finding himself homeless in London. And his friend, his good friend, Mark Leslie, published it for him. And it's becoming quite the book. And we're not the only ones that have read it. I actually talked to someone the other day who actually read this book as well. And he made some comments about it, as much like the comments we've made tonight. But wow. Go ahead.
Mark, it's been out now since early December of 2020. So it's still, you know, kind of new out there. But I was curious, and I couldn't really find anything online. How is it being received in London? And is it getting read? And what kind of response is it having?
Peter's actually been able to get the book through some contacts that he has, some really wonderful people that have been supportive and helping to get the book into the hands of some government people, which I think will be important. The eye-opening look at what's really going on, because, again, as you mentioned, you know, Peter's not going to just, and I can only imagine what it's like, especially for somebody who's suffering from a mental illness or from alcoholism and is just so desperate for some help that they will sign anything. They will agree to anything just to get food or safety. And Peter, of course, being of sound mind, saying I'd actually like to read the document, and they look at him like he has three heads, because they're not used to that, and I mean, just simple things like that, just understanding that there's a lot of broken pieces here. And so there has been some movement. The goal is, I mean, some of the folks who finish reading the book say, well, what can I do? I was like, well, on a personal level, when you have an opportunity to interact with or see a homeless person, remember that they're a human and treat them accordingly. Mm-hmm. And the other element is Peter is sharing his story and the pain and all of the things he's gone through in order to help affect change in a positive way. And one of the things you could do is, well, buy the book for a friend or buy a few of them to give away, you know, sure. even supporting a local bookshop, for example, because the book is available in hardcover and paperback and in ebook format. And the book is just so you understand the logistics of the publishing is Peter would not accept money, you know, from friends who had said, hey, can I help you out? Can I send you something? No, he wants to work for this. And so the only way I was able to send him money was as an advance for the book. It's like, okay, right. So here's, as your publisher, here's an advance for the book. And then right. The royalties as well will hopefully help him be able to save some money up to help with the position as he's working right. on all of those other pieces. So, you know, you're affected by it. Well, buy a copy and send it to your local. And again, you don't have to live in London. You can do this anywhere in the world because this is an issue that is global. Mm-hmm. You know, you send it to your local congressman, you send it to your local MP or MPP or where, depending on where you are in the world. We're a lot more like the UK and our government here in Canada. But, you know, send it to somebody, buy a copy, send it to your local radio station so that the personalities sure. can talk about it. And we can share these stories.
Yeah, for sure. Hold that thought. Right now, we are going to take a real quick break. And this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be right back after a brief word from Outlast.
Well, I hope that you are as compelled by our conversation tonight as we are in having it, that you will want to go and get tonight's featured book, Rude Awakenings from Sleeping Rough, by the author we're chatting about, Peter C. Mitchell. It's so easy to order it. Just go to our website, outwestshop.com, choose books and CDs from the toolbar, and then from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. The Writer's Block book list features titles of our guests, and you'll see this featured title is the first one in the line right now, tonight. Click the book cover. When we get off the air, there will be a link to tonight's interview on that book, and explore all our book categories. We add new titles daily. One-stop shopping supports our business Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. Remember, it's always a great day Out West.
And we are back with our guest tonight, Mr. Mark Leslie, and of course, Bobby Jean. And again, if you wanted to call and talk to Mark, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And our engineer will pick it up and he'll pass you over to us and you get to talk to Mr. Leslie, who has so far been proving out to be pretty damn fantastic. So let's kind of break away from the bad feelings now for a minute. Because this is an all you've published. And a good question for you, Mark, is indie publishing, traditional publishing, there's all kinds of little publishers out there. Yeah. Which do you prefer?
I think it depends. I mean, I for my own writing, I work with traditional publishers and I indie publish. I think each book has its own path and its own unique.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think there's pros and cons for all of it. This particular book from Peter, I mean, I published it under my imprint, which was an imprint I created for my own stuff.
Right.
But this is the very first book that I've done from somebody else because, again, I looked at it and because I know how to do this and have done this for a long time, right. I reached out to Peter and said, "Oh my God, your story has to be shared. Here's how you can do it. I'll help you." And then I realized is like, no, I have the ability to do it and help him. He works sure. on the writing. I take care of the logistics of publishing. And then that way we can kind of both do what we're best at.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think the only place that I would never publish anything is a vanity press. And yeah. I think that's mostly because you can wind up spending thousands of dollars for nothing.
Right.
And too many people get sucked into that. And I would recommend strongly, stay away from vanity presses. Any writer who's out there that's new and wants to be published, don't go to a vanity press, and you can tell where they are and who they are.
Right. They're the ones with the advertising money because they make billions of dollars.
They make billions of dollars, and the writers get nothing.
And what I always find is with the vanity presses, they may say, oh, for $5,000, we'll publish your book. For $10,000, we'll do whatever. And I often turn around and say, well, if you hire an editor yourself and you get the cover designer yourself, you'll pay a lot less and get better quality.
Right.
Because the goal of the vanity press is not to sell your books. No. The goal is to sell you services you don't need.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, I mean, you have a little publishing house. We have a little publishing house here, and our imprint is Tuscany Bay Books. And it started out something for Richard Polinelli and myself, and it turned out that now we're doing other people's books. We're right in the middle of doing three others. And they're all going to be under the Tuscany Bay imprint, which is kind of really cool.
Yeah.
And so it's growing. It's not fast, which I don't want it to grow fast. And it's steady. It's just keeps going, and it just keeps going. And we pick up more and more and more. We picked up another one of we already did one of Mickey's clients. What's her name? The gal who wrote the Chin Up, Tits Out. Miranda O.
Miranda O.
Yeah. We did Miranda's third book, and we're doing Mary Alexander, or Mary Jackson's her new books. We did reprinted with permission her first three Pulicious books, and now we're doing the her last two. And we did we just finished a sci-fi anthology called it's the Planetary Anthology, all the way all nine planets in the sun. So.
Cool.
It's growing very slowly, but I'm sure that you being a publisher, I don't think you probably want things to go crazy either. Because I mean, you know, if you're like us, you're two people, and you know, you got to edit, you got to proofread it, you got to format, and you got to and it's a lot of work and it's time consuming.
Yeah,
Mark, so, you have a fantastic website. You could spend hours on Mark's website.
He does.
And one of the things that I just got to a little too late to really take advantage, but you have your own podcast, and you've been on, I think the one that I was listening to is maybe the newest one. So you've been on since 2018, 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like 175 shows or something.
Yeah. I started in, January, 2018. I at least one episode a week, every Friday I release. And it's called Stark Reflections on Writing and Publishing. And because I embrace both traditional publishing and self-publishing, and I can kind of see the pros and cons and the ups and downs and the negatives and pluses, I have a very middle-of-the-road perspective. And a lot of traditional publishing folks ignore the benefit of indie or self-publishing. And a lot of self-publishing and indie-published folks ignore some of the benefits of traditional publishing, and they can't even see each other's world. So what I try to do is I try to Stark was my imprint that I first self-published with in 2004. And so Stark Reflections is meant to be an honest and open look at this, rather than trying to sugarcoat anything. Right. Trying to sell you anything.
Right.
I want to make sure that readers, writers can be informed, educated, so that they can make informed decisions for their own writing journey. Like that's really critical. So they don't get taken advantage of by a vanity press.
Yeah.
Right.
I would think for writers today, both of you having podcasts, both of you publishing and such, especially for the brand new writer, which is who we kind of aim this show at, you finally have your book done, or you've done your first draft and you're thinking, okay, what do I do next? It has to be very loud out there with so many, because there's so many more choices than there probably really ever have been. Right. And how to find good resources like both of you, how to find what you're doing in your podcast, how to find this podcast, how to find good, clear, answers, people that know and also can answer your show. I didn't get to really listen to very much. Do you have guests, or are you mostly, you have a mandate for that show? We're going to cover this topic and then you teach on that. Tell me a little bit more about what a listener would get from your podcast.
Yeah, the majority, about 75% of my episodes are interviews. So they're usually about 45 minutes to an hour long. And so the main content is an interview with a guest, and it's usually an author or an industry professional. Now, I have also interviewed other creative types. I've had artists, cartoonists. I've had musicians, because again, the creative spark is the creative spark, and writers can learn from people outside the industry. There's an introduction where I have a sponsor. I do a personal update. I share comments from my listeners from previous episodes. Personal updates, usually my own writing, just to kind of be honest and transparent about things that I'm doing, and especially the failures I make along the way, because I make a lot of them. Then the interview, and then at the end, I actually reflect on what I learned from the interview. It's usually a 3 to 5 minute piece. And so there's those, and then there's other ones where I've done special episodes, like how to work with bookstores, how to work with libraries, because my listener said, could you talk about this? And so then I just go on a 45 minute rant and record it.
Right. Hey, keep that thought, Bobby. We're going to run last quick break, and then we'll be back with you right now. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. And we'll be back with you and our guest, Mark Leslie, right after this real brief word from Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started, or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity, it's your brand, it's your future.
Okay, here we go. All right. In the few minutes, I'm going to hesitate about asking you about writer's block tonight, because this has been such a great conversation. I do want to ask you real quickly how you got into the paranormal.
I'm a big chicken. I still believe there's a monster under the bed, maybe one hiding in the closet. I've always been afraid of the dark. I've always been afraid of the unknown. And so it was natural in my writing to always look into those dark corners and have to be curious about what's out there that I can't see. So it drives my fiction, but then it also drives ghost stories. And what a great way to learn history too, right? Because I was never good at history. But you get into Canadian history and you say that our first prime minister used to commune with the dead. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's different.
Well, you're Canadians, what are you going to do? But then you turn around, you look at your shelves behind you, and I see one,
I know,
two, three, four, skeletons, five skulls.
Skulls,
that's only the
skeletons
ones I can see.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's about 13 here in the room with me.
Is there really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't turn the light off in that room and sit there in the dark.
Ironically, the skulls don't scare me. Here's the thing. I've always been fascinated with skulls. It's the one thing we all have in common as humans, regardless of where we are, who we are, that this is the common denominator, right? What is the old Latin saying, memento mori? Remember, you will die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we're all the same. The bones, I mean, basically we're different, but when you get right down to it, you know, that's really what we got.
Yeah, and I've just been into it. So I guess people buy them for me. I just am attracted. I go to craft fairs. I'm like, oh, a handcrafted skull. Okay, I'm going to have to buy that. And Barnaby beside me, I do travel with a life-size skeleton. There's one in the car. We got one on the bench in front of the house. We dress them up in seasonal garb. Just it amuses the neighborhood, especially as they're walking during COVID and they're looking for something to entertain or distract them. And it's great for a book signing, because if people see the guy sitting there with a skeleton, they know to either run in the opposite direction, don't make eye contact with the crazy man, or they go, oh my God, I bet you he writes my kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Here's
but
a
you
good
know,
tip.
That the skull on the skeleton wouldn't be correct unless it had a backwards baseball cap and sunglasses. That would correct me up.
No, oh, yeah, I should have done that. I only put a head garb on Barnaby today. So.
How funny. Do you put a Santa suit on the skeleton in front of the house?
We did, yeah, for Christmas time. So I think with Valentine's Day coming up, you'll probably get like a balloon heart or something.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well,
look, I, you know, I hate to break up this frivolity, but we're running out of time. And it's been so much fun having you. If you wouldn't mind give our listeners where they can find you, your website, your email, and if you wouldn't
sure.
mind that.
Yeah, you can find out about me at marklesley.ca. And if you're looking for, obviously you have a link to Rude Awakenings on your website as well. So
right.
You can find out about that book there as well.
Okay. And where are you going to be? What are you writing? Anything coming down the pike?
I have a novel, Fear and Longing in Los Angeles, is coming out in at the end of February. So that
oh,
is
wow.
That's going through its edits, and it's going to be out soon. So that's going to be that's a fun one.
Okay. And you know, we just so appreciate the fact that you spent this time with us tonight. I know it's tough; it gets late there, but we do appreciate you guys agreeing to come on the air with us. And we have a lot of listeners, and they love great authors. And especially the new writers that come on that listen to this show, and there's a lot of them. We try to get as much information out to them as we can, and you've done a great job, and we thank you so much. And we thank you again for being with us. And if you wouldn't mind, say good night to Mr. Mark Leslie.
Good night, Mark Leslie.
Thank you
guys
so much.
Give Peter our best.
Yes,
please.
Please do.
Definitely will. Thank you guys so much.
Okay. You take care of yourself. And we'll be in touch, I'm sure, because we have the same publicist. Okay, next week, we have Mr. Richard Polinelli with us. He, of course, is not only my business partner, he's a hell of a sci-fi writer. And he is the person who got together the planetary anthologies. Before he shot them over to me to finish editing and formatting and getting everything ready to go into publications. We are now getting awards for that anthology series. So I am very happy and very pleased about that. We'll bring that up a little bit next week. But one of the – Pluto, I believe it was – Mars. Mars just got recommended for an award. And so I'm tickled. I'm just absolutely tickled.
That's
so,
exciting.
You know, eventually this stuff pays
congratulations.
Off.
Yeah.
Just,
congratulations.
It takes a while. Thank you. And of course, I'm right in the middle of about the last quarter of a novel that I'm writing. So I finally got to that and got it started and working on it. And other than that, I'm just sitting here in Idaho, just twiddling my thumbs or what's left of them. COVID, you know. And going to sign off here, probably go have another glass of bourbon. What the hell? I mean, you know. So other than that, you got any announcements coming up, Bobby Jean?
Well, we are running a contest right now at outwestshop.com. You can read all about it. If you go to outwestshop.com, go to the toolbar, hit blog, and you'll see an article called Baking with Love Cookie Contest. And I partnered with our good friend of this show, Nancy Quinn, author and wildlife artist. She came up with a really great idea. And you can just go to that blog, watch the little video that she did, and get entered in a contest. We've got some really great prizes. So there's always something fun also happening out west.
And she is a fantastic guest.
Yeah.
She is so much fun to talk to. Her and her horse, Henry, they get up on her front porch.
And they're having snow.
They
to
got
town
a lot
yesterday
of it.
To
yeah.
get some things, and they're snuggling in, and they got snow. Yeah.
Well, good. They're in Montana. That's where they can stay.
Yeah.
And the snow can stay there, too. Okay. So for Bobby Jean Bell, myself, Russ Avison, our occasional co-host, Mr. Ronan Rosner, our engineer, and, of course, the owner of our station, Mr. Sam Hassan, we are out of here.